Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is TWiT. This Week in Google, episode 38 for April 18th, 2010. Self-aggrandizing jerks. This Week in Google is brought to you by GoTo Assist Express. If you're in tech support, save time and money by supporting your clients and colleagues remotely with GoTo Assist Express. For a free 30-day trial, visit GoToAssist.com/twig. And by Carbonite, the leader in online backup. Back up your PC or Mac off-site, securely and automatically. For a free trial offer plus 2 free months with purchase, go to Carbonite.com. Offer code TWIG. It's time for TWIG This Week in Google, the show that covers Google in the cloud. And joining us are usual cast of characters back from his ashen event, ashen-faced trip across the Atlantic, Mr. Jeff Jarvis, BuzzMachine.com. You made it!
It's a miracle. I'll tell you about it in a second. It's a bloody miracle that I got home.
The last man out of Europe.
Just about.
Also here with us, the great Gina Trapani from SmarterWare.org.
Greetings, humans.
And the author of The Complete Guide to Google Wave at CompleteWaveGuide.com. I forgot to mention Jeff is the author of What Would Google Do? And we are talking today about, there's a lot of talk about, including the Chirp conference and so forth. What were you doing in Germany, though, Jeff?
I was at the Republica conference in Berlin, which is a gathering of 2,500 bloggers or thereabouts, which is probably every blogger in Germany. But it's kind of nice because we really don't have blogger get-togethers in the U.S. anymore. And it was nice. So I gave, the first time I gave a talk on, it was called The German Paradox, Privacy, Publicness, and Penises.
I like the alliteration.
A lot of discussion of saunas. And in fact, I invited the crowd after my talk to continue the discussion in the sauna next door, and 4 guys showed up.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's great. That's really cool. That's great. So did they concur with your thesis that there's something about privacy that's a little different in Germany?
No, they acknowledge that they're different about that, and I push it, and some, you know, see the point, and some don't like it and argue, and that's what's fun about it. But the German view of privacy is a bit more extreme than even ours in the U.S., except for genitals in the sauna. And
I would say in Europe in general, right? It's the EU as much as – is it just Germany?
Well, it is the EU as well. But Germany has its own particular nuttiness about privacy. And so they go after Street View. They sabotage the Street View car.
We talked last week about the Street View signs in Germany, the no robots.txt, which I think is a Photoshop.
You know, and so they tend to go to a bit extreme on it, but that makes it an interesting laboratory to talk about why what is private and why what is public, and how that operates. So it was a lot of fun. It was a big crowd, 2,500 people, and they also do this great thing I got to take part in. They do a Twitter lesung, a Twitter reading, where they do as if dramatically
a dramatic Twitter reading.
Of funny tweets.
I had a ham sandwich this morning.
It's really great. We ought to do it here, too. And they're going to do a book out of that. And that was great. So then I tried to get out of there, but the ash cloud was coming over Europe. Yikes. And I was to leave Friday morning, and Berlin was closed. Frankfurt was closed. I managed to grab a ride down to Munich with somebody who'd rented the last car at Munich Airport, the fixer for, I swear to you, a Bollywood film crew in Berlin doing scouting locations, fixed me up with his friend who was in this car. We dashed down to Audi's headquarters north of Munich. By the way, I vowed during the ride not to calculate the kilometer to hour versus mile per hour conversion. Because after I got out of the car, I realized that she was driving at 135 miles an hour.
You had 180 kilometers per hour. That is not fast.
Then I got a cab to Munich, and then I got to Munich and was on standby. But I got on the plane, and in the Munich airport, a guy turns next to me and says, "Are you Jeff Jarvis?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "I listen to Twig."
Oh, that's
Yay!
Nice.
Yay!
So we have one listener.
He listens to every Leo. I wish I remembered his name, and I hope if you're in the chat, remind me, because I'm terrible with names. But his wife, his long-suffering wife, was there as well. She's in pharmacology and is forced to listen to every Leo Laporte production in the car. And he's trying to convince her to come to the cottage. And so it was great to, you know, run across
I hope she doesn't.
Of Leo's life everywhere.
She's going to pour a cup of coffee in my lap, I think, if she comes to the cottage.
Well, you know, it wasn't the first time. It happened, I think, two or three times in Berlin that people recognized me because of Twig.
Really?
In Berlin. Yeah.
Isn't that wild?
Right. Right. So hello. Hello, Berlin.
Hello.
I only get recognized because of Twig. It's fantastic.
But you both are famous in your own right. That's what gets me. Here's, by the way, thanks to our chat room. This is the, here's the picture of the Stadt Eppelheim Rhein Neckar Kreis robots.txt for Eppelheim user agent Google Street View disallow. It's not allowed here. You may not use it.
The Germans are nutty about this. And you know, a lot of talk about Google has a big problem in Germany. Because, you know, they know it. It's a PR problem, but it's worse than I knew. I mean, because I go on, and to them I'm being counterintuitive about things like Street View, it gets on to the front page of newspapers there.
What does that say? Eines Bloggers.
Well, it's the view of bloggers, the Republica. This is now embarrassing.
Jeff Jarvis show.
But because if you talk about Google and you defend Google, it becomes news there.
Wow.
It's really pretty strange.
Interesting.
So, but I'm back. And I have friends from the conference who are stuck over there. Our friend Heather Gold. We had dinner with her, Mika Sifri from PDF, and I Thursday night. And she's to go on to Finland, but who knows whether she's going to get the heck out of Berlin.
Wow.
Wow.
Well, I wish Heather, who's also a show host here at Twit, all the best. I hope she gets out. I guess, you know, why not? You get a little extra time there. But still, maybe not the way you'd like to.
Yeah, I was thinking that if I ended up stuck in Munich, I could go to some saunas.
Is there any news out of Republica? Is there anything newsworthy out of there?
Interesting in a lot of discussion of net neutrality and a lot of discussion that between... and I'm forgetting the people who said it, but the digital bill in the UK, with things going on in the US, with things going on elsewhere, they're really, and Cory Doctorow wrote a brilliant piece in The Guardian about the, I'm forgetting what is it called, the digital economy bill.
Terrible, yeah.
And saying it's war now. And it really is war now. And that's the talk. That was the drumbeat we were hearing in Berlin, was a lot of that it's corporate interests that are now trying to use government to take over the internet and to restrict what we can do and to kick us off the internet. And it ain't China, but it's our own versions thereof. And a lot of drumbeat on that. And I think a lot of we need to worry about a movement. And I go back to I keep on thinking of what Gina said, that geeks tend to find the way around. Right. And now I think we got to face this head on. So anyway, that was Republica.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if we should, maybe we need to do a show, Take Back the Internet show or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very scary. There is a KML file for the Google Earth of the Iceland ash cloud, if you want to see it as it's moving across. I don't know where, I guess the images are from NASA.
From NASA. Leo, I tweeted it this morning. I didn't put it up on the feed. There's a wonderful animation of the cloud going across Europe. And it's spreading and spreading and spreading. The New York Times has a great map showing every airport. It's really phenomenal. Europe's shut. And people cannot get out. When this last went off, I think in 1811, it lasted a year.
Wow. A year?
Yeah.
We're gonna have to. Is this gonna bring back transatlantic ocean liners?
I've seen tweets about that and jokes about that. Robert Patterson, a friend of mine, did a tweet earlier and a post earlier about whether this is a black swan event and what would this do to change economies.
Currently, you can go to Spain, to Sicily, you can go to Turkey and Greece, but if you want to go anywhere from Iceland to that border, those borders, which means all
you
of
still go to Iceland. Iceland's
fine. The volcano's going south.
Yeah.
But you can't go to Scandinavia. You can't go to the UK. You can't go to Europe. You can't go to Moscow.
People all over the UK are creating pictures of the gorgeous orange sunsets they're having there because of this.
It's not you're like in darkness underneath it.
Not at all. No. And the problem, I read a story, I can't remember where, but I read a story about, it was a blogger who explained why this is bad. The ash has silica in it, and in the high heat of a jet turbine.
It turns into glass.
And then as it cools going through the turbine, it reforms and sticks to the turbine and messes it up. It's glass, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't want jet engine seizing.
No, we don't want that.
So you were at Republica, and Gina, you were at Chirp.
Yes, I was.
The first official Twitter conference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a really good event, except for the terrible Wi-Fi. It was a really good event.
No. You're kidding me.
It was really frustrating. I love those guys, and they put on a fantastic event. Food was great. The schedule was great. Everything was fantastic. The Wi-Fi really wasn't that good. And it's so hard because it's like, you know, this is like priority zero.
This is the revenge of Loic.
Yeah, it must have been.
Screw you, Twitter. I give you your Wi-Fi. Here, you can have my web Wi-Fi. So they announced a number of things, including an advertising model that's so far pretty mild. In fact, it reminds me a lot of Google. They're going to put ads in search.
It sure does. They are. They're calling it promoted tweets. They're not ads, Leo. They're just regular tweets.
Well, you know, I looked.
As they explained.
Yeah, they're regular tweets, but they're selected by the advertiser.
Of course. They're tweets that the person pays for to have promoted. To show up first in search results, they get a different background. It says promoted by a particular user. And what was really cool is that they described what they're calling a resonance score. They're going to assign a resonance score to each tweet. And it's like and tweets with a low resonance score, promoted tweets with a low resonance score, fall off. They don't show those as
well. That's
much.
Interesting. So that's what
Dig, like, Google that's, model there.
Or Dig.
It's very much like PageRank, right? Or Dig, exactly. So and the resonance score is interesting.
AdWords, for that sense, that you can't buy the top position.
Right.
Oh, interesting.
Right. Number of clicks, right?
Oh, interesting. Right.
But they have pretty deep metrics for a given tweet. You know, I mean, how many people favored it? How many people retweet it? How many people reply to it? How many people click the link in the tweet? I mean, they can go, I think, a little deeper and figure out, you know, different kinds of interaction. I suppose Dig can do a similar thing. So that was exciting. So promoted tweets and at anywhere, they kind of explained a little bit. They launched a great new developer site, which is fantastic for
They're Twitter adding though. Also an interesting feature for developers called annotations.
That was very exciting. That was definitely a thing that most developers are most excited about, but it's not launched yet.
Explain it.
This is how I understand it. Annotations is a way for any Twitter app to store arbitrary metadata in the Twitter database on a per tweet basis, right? So I'm developing a Twitter app called Think Tank, and I want to store extra metadata for a given tweet, like number of replies or number of users on my site, you know, that gave it a certain number of stars or any data point that I want, a key value pair. So then as a developer, I can store in the Twitter database, you know, in my namespace, in my app's namespace, so Think Tank, a key value pairs, whatever data I want to store there. So it's fantastic for Twitter because they get more metadata for a given tweet. And it's good for developers because you're not storing metadata on your side that's connected to data stored elsewhere. It's all in one place.
You could presumably display it, though, in a third-party client.
Yes.
And you could certainly use it to search. Here's the issue, and Robert Scoble raised this. There's no standard set of pairs, right?
Right. There is no standard set of pairs, although I imagine that pairs are going to become standardized.
That's kind of the Twitter way, isn't it? Let the users work it out.
Let the users determine it. And from what I understand, different namespaces will be available. Like, everything will be public. So if a great service is storing metadata that my app is interested in, I can access that.
So this is you don't have control over it yourself. Twitter or anyone can use it.
Right. Any app can store the data, and any app can request the data from other apps, which is pretty neat.
So if the more clever everyone is, the better off we all are, and no one can necessarily benefit alone.
Yes, exactly.
Except
It'll
Twitter.
Really, really interesting.
Except Twitter, exactly.
Well, right. Twitter benefits the most, of course.
No one benefits but us. We benefit.
It was a really good conference. I was struck by how the execs, you know, the narrative that the execs kind of put out there was like, look at us. We're this tiny little company, and things got really crazy really fast. Isn't it crazy? All these crazy things crazy. That happened to us so quickly. It's awesome and crazy. And
gosh,
and,
shucks.
After a little while, I was kind of like, okay, guys. Like, I know you got robbed of your, you know, startup childhood, and you're only 75 people, and you're like a couple of dudes in jeans and t-shirts, but like, start acting like the company that's pushing billions of tweets around daily, you know, terabytes of data around. Yeah, I was kind of, by the end of the conference, I was kind of like, okay, I'm tired of the like, wow, this is crazy, dude. Look at how crazy this is. And although, I wanted to hear a little more kind of confidence and a little more like, not confidence, but a little more, you know, we have it together and this is our plan and like, you know, going forward. So
it's like maturity you want.
Maturity,
forget. More maturity. And I mean, yeah. I understand that their growth trajectory was insanely steep. I get it. But yeah, I did want to see maybe a little more maturity. I mean, it's not like Ev, you know, isn't used to having a small company get, you know, get really big or at least get bought by a big company before. So it was a good event. I'm glad I went. We launched the White House query to the public.
Tell me about
on
that.
Twitter.
Yeah.
It went pretty well. It was quite a scramble. It was a crazy week. A think tank worked, which was very exciting for me. That was a big few moment. We got about two. We're still cleaning the data, and we're still you know, kind of cleaning up the replies. But it looks like we got about 2,000 responses on Twitter and Facebook. There were two tweets and one Facebook status update. It was interesting that the responses came in on Facebook a lot faster than on Twitter. So we learned actually a lot of interesting lessons.
So one of the questions was, what grand challenge should be on our nation's to-do list?
Mm-hmm.
Reply with your idea now. And any reply, did it automatically get collated by your system? Or do you
yes,
have,
it did.
It based it did. On the WHGC tag?
Based on the in reply to status ID. So people had to reply to that particular Got status it. ID. But we were also capturing any mention of at White House or WHGC. So that's what the data cleaning is about. We're kind of assigning those stray replies to those status, you know, to those updates.
What was the other question? I don't see the other one on here.
It was the same question, different wording on a different day at a different time. We kind of wanted to hit the network a couple of times with different wording and see. So
are
I think
you doing
there was
any
one
semantic
other
analysis to cluster them.
We are hoping to do that. We're going to make the data public and hope that we get some really good semantic analysis. And there was a lot of noise, as you would expect, but there were also lots
marijuana,
of really good...
Marijuana, did marijuana live?
There were fewer mentions of marijuana, legalizing marijuana, than I thought.
You're talking about the fact that the last time there was a poll by the White House, marijuana legalization topped it, because apparently potheads have a lot of time on their hands. who would have thunk
this
it?
This is cool, man.
Cool.
Before 420, they do.
But this did specifically say science and tech, right?
It did. And hey, we got lots of replies, which were, you know, insert crazy political agenda, completely off topic, noisy response here.
Now, I retweeted it. So since I retweeted it, that would count if people respond to my retweet?
Yes.
Okay. So you're smart enough to kind of get it that way, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And I imagine, I would bet, I know you don't have the finals, but I bet that the NASA announcements that President Obama made were kind of dominated.
Absolutely. Lots of responses about space travel, about colonizing Mars, a space elevator, human on Mars by 2025. You know, and the way that the first question was framed was, you know, the next Apollo landing or human genome, you know, what should our next grand challenge be? And I think that really led people a certain way, which is why we kind of did another tweet later that didn't put any ideas in people's head and just kind of wanted to get what people said. But, you know, we got a lot of cure cancer. Mine was very early, you know, early earthquake to tsunami detection, like 24 hours early. Anil's was teleport visible matter by 2025. That was one of my favorites.
I don't think, you know, Obama's going to say that in the State of the Union. I'm just thinking.
Kind of fun that you could put it out there.
And by the time this decade is out, we will be able to teleport visible matter. It could be. Could be good. Could be huge.
I'd like you to meet my new Secretary of State, Scotty.
Captain, I can transport visible matter. We've got Mark Linford is in the studio. He's worked a little bit on Think Tank. He did the Windows install instructions, he says.
He did. Yeah. Hey, Mark, thank you so much for writing up the Windows install instructions because we didn't have them. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Mark's one of my favorite wiki writers.
Oh, well, there you go. Wow, he just passed out. Mark, are you okay? I think he had a heart attack. Wow, he's excited. So, you know, there is an interesting, the response to this is kind of interesting. For instance, Bill Gross, who has TweetUp, which was an Idea Lab company, is also launching kind of a Twitter AdSense mashup kind of thing.
Yeah, full disclosure here is I'm an investor.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, he came after me on that, and I figured, well, now, you know, what the hell, the man who invented the Google ad model, what the F?
He was at Overture.
Yeah, at Overture, he created Overture, and of course Yahoo bought that, and Yahoo blew it, because they could have been Google.
Right.
And I'm not the best one to explain it. I just kind of said, yeah, Bill, but basically it's more of a, his editorial view is that, he, like Twitter, he'll try to expose better tweets. But then this is basically a search engine play.
But how do you do it? I mean, you have to use TweetUp, right?
No, he's done deals with, so far, with a lot of the
third-party clients. Yeah. So yeah. Now the Twitter strategy gets a little bit clearer. You see why Twitter did, you know, bought Tweety to do a Mac or iPhone client. Why they're doing their own BlackBerry? They have announced that they're doing an Android client that's delayed.
Well, they're also replacing. Well, they've already replaced Bitly, but they're doing their own shortener as well.
And they're going to do their own shortener. So you see that this is in a way of closing in the ecosystem to make sure that you don't see Bill Gross's ads. You see Twitter's ads in their clients.
But who knows? I mean, they'll meet with them and see what the deal is. What's interesting to me. I'll be eager to hear you report, Gina, on the mood of the developers at the conference, given all this. But are you a platform? And if you're a platform, then you have to be careful about your competition with your channel conflict that you have. Those who are spreading you and using you, if you start to compete with them, what does that do to your growth? And I still haven't got my head around this, about where the Twitter ecosystem looks like versus the Google ecosystem.
Yeah, were developers, were they perturbed by the Tweety acquisition at Chirp?
I think so. There was a developer meetup, which I heard about secondhand, I wasn't at, and I think that some folks were kind of perturbed or upset or not sure what to do next. And, you know, there were some quips about it at the showcase. There was a Twitter app showcase after the hack day, and someone presented a Twitter client, and Paul Graham said, well, I don't know about the viability of a Twitter client.
That hurts.
You know, on the iPhone. But I think the general mood was like, well, hey, we have to get a little more creative and make stuff that's not, you know, that wouldn't be a Twitter core offering.
Some time ago, a few months ago, when I complained about things that didn't exist on Twitter, Fred Wilson tweeted back and said, that's for the independent developers to do, and that's the model.
Whoops.
And now they've done this 180 on that, and I'm trying to think of what the analogy is. It's the Google Books analogy. When anywhere near the content business, it found itself in a huge channel conflict with its partners.
Twitter made a really good case for the Twitter iPhone app. And the way that they did it is, on stage, they showed a video of a 24-year-old Stanford graduate just starting to use Twitter, trying to find a Twitter client on her iPhone and install it. And it was painful, full, like 5 to 7 minutes of this woman just like,
what? Was she
now,
a moron?
Which one?
What?
She searched for Twitter. It was kind of slow. She was like, now,
oh, come on, that's
what's this? Which one? You know, it was convincing.
Was she a history major?
It was. Well, you know, I mean, there are a lot of choices out there, and there's not the one obvious choice. Right, which is, so Twitter's take is like, if we offer obvious choices of clients for people to use, we will get more users more quickly. Like their whole thing is that the Twitter user experience involves too many hurdles and is too, they want to create a more friction-free, I think was the phrase they used, experience. And the easier they make it for people to start using Twitter, the more users you'll have, and that will benefit the developers in the end. And I gotta say, I buy it. Leo clearly does not buy
this. But you're the one who says the iPad sucks because it's a closed environment. I mean, isn't this, and without the finesse of Steve Jobs, the same exact thing? Well, we're going to improve the user experience by reducing your choice to one.
But they're not reducing choice. I mean, there's going to be the one official Twitter iPhone app.
But those who give you choice.
Then there are going to be developers who make other clients that the power
it's
users pass
so
around.
It's so confusing to intelligent college graduates that we are going to eliminate all choice. Make it easier for you. Everybody will have spaghetti and meatballs for dinner.
But Leo, listen, on this show, we recommend a Dolphin browser, right? Which is an alternative browser for Android.
Love it.
And there's Opera on the iPhone. I mean, there are, the developers can continue to make clients that do advanced things like mute hashtags or mute users, and the power users will take those up because they want their client to do maybe a little more than Tweety.
So was your sense from developers that they're going to keep doing third-party Twitter clients?
No.
Okay. Just curious.
They're going to move on and do other things.
So Bill Gross.
I think Bill Gross is motivated to do one.
Yeah, I think, Bill, we got to ask a question. I mean, good luck, Bill. Right? Yep. I mean, I know you're on the board here. And by the way, you should mention to him that TweetUp is kind of commonly used in the parlance already, and it's very confusing. I thought this was the same as a TweetUp, and it's not.
It's not. He just got the URL and used it. Yeah, I agree.
And the other thing about promoted tweets is that it's a 50-50 rev share with the developers who show the promoted tweets and their search results in their clients.
Okay.
And there's a reason.
Now, okay, so they're not requiring that a third party, unless, well, now wait a minute, what if it's an in-stream tweet? And this is the next step. Now you've got promoted tweets in search.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that a developer could do to say, I'm not going to do, because they're going to do promoted tweets in the stream, right?
I believe that promoted tweets will show up in stream.
That's on the roadmap.
As they would as just a regular tweet when they're posted.
So if I'm a third party developer, I don't know, there's no way I can turn that off.
Right, but, you know, I mean, it's a tweet. A tweet is a tweet is a tweet, and if someone subscribed to a user, they're going to show up in your stream.
Explain that to me there, Gina.
Just as a user, that user perspective.
So, JetBlue,
what happens to my Twitter tomorrow? Am I suddenly going to be getting promoted tweets in my streams, whether I ask for them or not?
No. Only search results. They will only appear at the top of search results.
No. It's my understanding they're going to put them in the stream.
That's TweetUp is search only, I think. I thought Twitter was in the stream, too.
Oh, I'm not sure. My understanding was that it's just search. Promoted tweets aren't going to get pushed to users unless you're following the user who posted the tweet. So if I'm following JetBlue and they tweet something but they also make it a promoted tweet, I'll see it in my stream because I follow them already. But it will show up in search results as well. But I don't know.
Ad Grant says in-stream ads to come to Twitter. Let me see. Search results and relevant streams. We'll insert ads and search results and relevant streams.
But what's
streams.
Relevant? That's the question.
Relevant is
amen, brother.
People who are following them already, no? That's how I read it.
Based on purchase keywords and contextual relevancy.
So, okay. So if I say, God, I need a cup of coffee, I might see a Starbucks tweet next.
And they'll stay on the top of a given search result or stream rather than scrolling off the page as does a normal tweet, thereby giving the advertiser lengthier.
But only in the Twitter client, because a third-party client is just going to think it's a tweet.
Well, the API will indicate what tweets are promoted.
But I can ignore it.
Well, sure. As a developer, you could.
Yeah, in fact, you know what I'm going to do is I just figured out how to sell a third-party client. I'm going to delete all promoted tweets from your stream. They won't show up.
Bingo. I tweeted.
But then you don't make any money as the developer. So you can sell a client and decide not to show any promoted tweet. Like, here's an ad-free client. You pay me $3 for an iPhone app.
There you
sure,
go.
That would be an approach. I mean, it's totally opt-in. And there are guidelines. Twitter's going to publish guidelines about how you should display promoted tweets. You know, and you should indicate somehow that it is a promoted tweet. I don't know how they'll enforce that. But yeah, no, that would be a market. Here's an ad-free Twitter.
That's actually.
Well, in fact, I tweeted the other day that I wanted to have a client that would erase any mention of Mayer.
Marissa Mayer?
No, God, no. Mayer or badge. I want anything with Mayer or badge just taken out. And I wanted.
You don't want any Foursquare tweets.
Exactly. And I don't want any Here I Am tweets. And I don't want any. And I want to also take retweets.
Well, I think that's what annotation could be really useful for. If we came up with a canonical set of things like this is a location tweet, this is a Foursquare tweet,
yes,
you could really filter your tweets very effectively.
Right, so actually Bill Gross emailed me and he said those are great ideas and you know want to do those. So I think that the more we put in control, it's going to be hard to figure out how, as long as there is a real API and as long as you don't have to sign your life away as to how to do it and as long as you don't have to get approved, which is Apple-like, I don't know why I couldn't just if I can get a browser that takes out the ads, surely I can get a Twitter client that takes out the ads.
I'd like a Twitter client that filters out John Mayer tweets, actually. I don't know if we can get by the way, here's Gina with Marissa Mayer. Isn't that a cute picture? You make such a lovely couple. What was this? Was that a chirp?
That was at Trip. That was after the showcase. So, you know, during the showcase, there was a couple of developers presented their iPhone client. This is the one that Paul Graham said, oh, I don't know about the viability of an iPhone client. But the client had advanced filtering, right? So you could filter out hashtags. You could mute users. Could say, you know, block all the Foursquare ads. That is a power user Twitter client. And I think that there may be room for that in the ecosystem. So I forget what it was called. Agora? Agora? I'll look it up. But yes, that photo of Marissa and Meyer and I got taken, you know, it was literally a 30-second interaction. And I think I managed to not make a fool of myself, although it was a big risk.
Oh. And she knew who you were, I'm sure.
She did not know who I was. I said that I co-host This Week in Google with you and Jeff Jarvis. And she she was blank when I shook her hand. But then I said Jeff Jarvis and she said, oh, yes, we work with him on What Will Google Do? So I was like, yeah, I know Jeff. I was going to get a T-shirt. I know Jeff.
You should just say, turn on Google goggles, Marissa. You'll know everything there is about me. Just make that the special in-house.
I think it's already built into the brain there.
I think it's built into her.
You are. Yes, I know you. You are Jeff Jarvis. Yes, yes. I know who you are. You should have said life hacker. She would have jumped for joy. Come on.
Oh, I doubt it.
The fact that you wrote a book about, did she know that you wrote the book on Google Wave?
I wasn't going to pitch my book to her. I already felt like too much of a fangirl. I didn't want to be too. I was like, we would love to have you on the show someday. And she sort of looked at me kind of blankly.
I didn't on the media this morning, and Clay Shirky was reprising the rant post that got him into some adulation and trouble, saying that women need to be better at being self-aggrandizing jerks and promote their own stuff.
Yes.
So I'm not necessarily taking a stand there, but you should have promoted it. Jeez.
You should have been a self-aggrandizing jerk, Gina. I don't understand why.
Here's my book.
Gina, you're
my
very
podcast.
Bad at being a jerk.
Believe me, I know plenty of self-aggrandizing jerks who happen to be female, and it's not appealing.
It's not attractive either way.
It's not attractive on guys or gals.
No. It isn't. But, you know, I was glad
she would have
the photo.
Hugged you because somebody actually likes Wave. You.
By the way, the photo got taken, but it kind of led lots of people to comment on, like, you know, levels of attractiveness, who was more attractive.
Yeah, there you go. Isn't that nice?
It's always the risk when
isn't
it's like.
Isn't that nice? Well, I did it. I said you're a cute couple, so I.
Oh, no, that's okay. It was fine. Totally fine.
By the way, the chat room has no idea who Marissa Meyer is, but they certainly know who Gina and Jeff are. Marissa, who?
Thanks,
they're
chat
also
room.
Saying get her on the show, which I did propose earlier on.
We would love to.
I would love to get her on the show. I tried to pitch her on getting on the show, but she didn't seem very eager to give me her assistance.
No.
You know,
my suspicion is we're not going to get high Google executives on the show, I don't think.
I think
maybe.
That's a challenge, Leo.
All right.
Let's see.
All right. I'm going to take that challenge.
We'll all try it.
You know, I remember the days when Google was young and brash, and I told you this story before. I was invited to dinner with Larry and Sergey and stuff. It was by a PR firm. Like, it was like, we need to promote Twitter. Those days are long gone. Nobody asked us to.
She was the only woman on the panel in the showcase, kind of, offering her opinions on the apps that were presented. And she was really good. All of her comments were really.
She's the UI expert at Google. She's the one who designed.
Yeah, she's
the
VP of product, right? Yeah.
Does she have anything to do with Wave and Buzz?
I mean, as far as I know, every single product that gets released goes through Marissa. So I imagine
those don't seem to have that Marissa, you know, that Google touch, that radical simplicity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the buzz grew up. I would love to know what Marissa's friends list looked like.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
Indeed.
Let's take a break. We're going to come back. Gina Trapani from smarterword.org and Jeff Jarvis from buzzmachine.com. We're talking about Google in the cloud on This Week in Google. I don't know why I say that, since everybody probably knows. It's my old days in radio. It's called the reintro. Before we go on, though, let me reintro the folks at Citrix who do those great remote access products. They're so well-known in enterprise. You just say the word Citrix, everybody knows. They know what you're talking about. And they make great consumer products. And they have a couple of new products we're going to be talking about more on the show. One of them, it's not exactly new, but it's updated. Go to Assist Express. I've used for years, and I love it. We used to use it on the screensavers. Now it's faster, easier, and boy, there's no better way to support family, friends. If you're an IT guy or support person, this is a great tool for you. You can try it free by going to gotoassist.com/twig, gotoassist.com/twig. And checking it out for 30 days absolutely free. It's remote access, but there's some features designed for the support pro. For instance, and I used this myself when I was on the line with my mom and she was complaining I was on Skype. I said, well, here, click this link. She didn't have anything installed. She clicked the link. 30 seconds later, I am inside her computer and fixing the problem. You could do unattended support. You could do 8 sessions at once, which is great. If you're doing a scan or install, you could just move to the next session and the next and the next. It has a built-in feature that will tell you what operating system, exactly what version's running, what software and running in the background, including security software. You could drag and drop fixes from your computer to theirs and on and on and on. It is just fantastic. And, of course, completely secure, 128-bit SSL point-to-point, PC and Mac. So you can run it on Macs to fix PCs and vice versa. And integrated live chat so you can talk with their supportee online as you're doing it. I can go on and on. I want you to try it. That's the best way. Go to assist.com/twig and give it a try. I use it now all the time. They do have day passes for those of us who are amateur support professionals. You can just get a day pass and fix all the family's computers at once or get the month to month. Go to assist.com/twig. Try it for a month free. I think you're going to like it. Google has gotten into the Twitter story, by the way. Google had real-time search for a while, and now they're doing it. What's new? Is it?
They've added a new means of. I mean, it's the thing that the Daylife and where I'm a partner and Google News and such have done of having a timeline of the tweets, but now Google has added a timeline to current tweet search, so you can go back, you can see the activity. So I think one of the things I put up on the feed was the ash search or the ash use of the word ash in tweets. The weird thing about it is hashtags don't work. I couldn't get a hashtag to work.
Really?
No.
Huh.
But words work.
Well, I guess then they're leave off the pound and you got the hashtag, right?
Exactly. But it was odd because you think, well, unless you want to search specifically for things on that topic.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, the hashtag for the Ash story is #. And it's taken off. It's worked. Even Lufthansa is putting out tweets about being closed with the #.
Oh, man. This is why I love the geek community.
I made my first German joke in Twitter in the midst of driving down at killer speeds to Munich, and the word for a-hole in German is Arschloch. And so I said just Arschloch.
Ooh, I like it.
Germans were all correcting my spelling. Thought I was rather rude.
Oh, no.
Jesus, you got to explain a joke to a German. Man,
the guys, well, of course you do. This is a surprise?
You know what's weird, though? I clicked on this link to look at the timeline, which is super cool and interactive and all that. But if you search for every other term I search for, like Sean White, for example, I want to see him, I want to see what people said when I get no results.
Try is that quotes just, around it.
Am I being crazy?
Oh, put quotes around it because I'm getting all sorts of weird crap that has Sean and White, but not Sean White together. Okay, now I've got quotes. Yeah, this works. Didn't work for you? Sean White's in the Today Show.
I must have configured my Google search to be.
There's only like 5 of them.
Isn't that strange?
What? They're
that's weird.
What? Do chirp.
They're not. Are they not searching the fire hose? They must have the fire hose, right?
They must.
There's a lot for chirp, and this is just 2 days worth. There's a lot more.
You can go below. Then it has older at the bottom of that. I'm trying to click my video screen to click on it.
Where?
Back up to the timeline. Right below the timeline, you'll see the 2 little double arrows to the left.
Ah. Now I can go back in the timeline.
You see it's at the beginning.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
There's something about my setup is screwy because I'm not getting results. I'll have to figure that out.
Huh. Do you have to be logged in?
I am logged in.
Oh, very interesting. But for a while, tweets have been showing up in my search results. This is just another way
to deal just with that.
This is sort of replay. I feel like this was in response to the Library of Congress thing, where it's like
now, Google wants okay. To be able can to- I bring? Can I? Is this a stupid press release or what? The Library of Congress is going to store the tweets.
Yeah, all public tweets, billions of public
tweets.
Okay,
so I did a little math. There's 50 million tweets a day right now. And if let's say that there have been 50 million tweets for the a day for the last 4 years, and each of those tweets is the maximum 140 bytes.
Mm-hmm.
That's about 9 terabytes. It's 2, 3, maybe 4 hard drives in the closet, in the back, in the Library of Congress.
Right. Well, they should have been saving the web and things of value.
My point exactly. Because, for instance, now you've got a tweet. Now I was looking at your tweet that links back via Bitly to this Google search. Click it in the Library of Congress and you're going to get nothing because they didn't store the things. Most tweets are referencing a web page.
Yeah. Mm.
So there's nothing mm-hmm. there. So all you're really getting is ham sandwich.
But you could do some really cool sentiment analysis, I think.
You could. I mean, we've seen, you know, lots of nice mashups. But mm-hmm. your point exactly, Jeff. It's really, you've got to store the whole web.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that the Library of Congress thinks this is valuable, which okay, fine, but they've done nothing. They've looked, as far as I know, lifted no fingers to store the web, and that's had to be a private effort of
Brewster Kahle
there in San Francisco. Thank you.
I told KGO Radio asked me for an interview on it, and I said, I'll do an interview. And I said, but next time call Brewster Kahle and see what he thinks about it, because, of course, he's doing the Internet Archive. Now, we just said, okay, maybe it's 9 terabytes for 4 years of Twitter. It's that much a day. He's storing huge, vast quantities, and he's working with the Library of Alexandria all over the world. I mean, he's really doing this amazing Internet Archive effort.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. The Internet Archive effort is amazing and definitely admirable.
And the Library of Congress has our tweets.
But, you know, there's something, I mean, tweets are, you know, there's such a simple data structure and, like, very discreet.
Well, you know better than anybody. They should at least have a copy of Think Tank in there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can really do a lot with, like, a certain phrase. I mean, you can do certainly a lot with an archive of the entire Internet. But there are certain characteristics, I think, of tweets in that they're quotes, they're things that people said who have a social graph that, you know, they're contained, you know, when a certain, there's just a very strict and simple data structure that lends itself, I think, to analysis that maybe you wouldn't be able to do as easily or wouldn't be as, you know, straightforward as analysis on, you know, the entire web.
Currently,
agreed.
What we want is if the Library of Congress is there to store our culture,
get the whole thing for crying out loud.
Then yeah, then fine. Spend the money. Take Brewster out of his economic misery.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure he's spending a lot. And there's also rights issues. He's storing stuff even though he knows perfectly well that he doesn't have the rights to do so.
Yes. Mm.
He couldn't possibly have the rights to do so. Bear tells me in our chat room the Library of Congress is storing all government sites, and
well, that's exciting,
and political sites as well. I don't know.
I'm surprised we haven't heard. I joked also there was a New York Times story about coupon barcodes carrying data with them. Yeah, and there's the one. I think every reporter now has a save get key to put in their privacy advocates are concerned.
Yes.
I'm surprised we haven't heard that about the Library of Congress. I thought that immediately we'd have the government story in our tweets. Oh, no.
Well, who owns our tweets? Let me ask a question. And this actually came up. Merlin Mann, I loved this. You probably saw it. There's a Twitter book, Twitter Aphorisms or something, on Amazon. And Merlin Mann posts a review saying, you know, they didn't ask me that my tweets are in here. I'm pissed off. You shouldn't buy this book. And there's like 80 other people down. It's got a 1-star rating. It's like panned. Because then after the fact, the company writes to Merlin saying, oh, we're going to use your tweets in the book. And he said, that's like the burglar coming back afterwards and saying, you mind if I steal your stuff? He says, until they return my stereo system, repair the broken window and say, I'll never do it again. I'm not satisfied. Who owns our tweets? I mean, it's nice of Twitter to give them to the Library of Congress. Do they own them?
It's a good question.
They're only giving public tweets.
Right? Oh, that's good to know.
It's only public tweets. Yeah. It's okay. Not tweets on protected accounts. So that's first.
By the way, there was a HarperCollins book of tweets before that, as I understand, did get permissions.
Yeah. What's his name? What's his name from Gawker? Nick
exactly.
Denton. Nick Denton did a book. He asked me.
It was another guy.
The other Nick. Nick Douglas,
yeah.
After he left Gawker, he emailed me and said, is it all right? He asked for permission of everybody he used. He sent us all a copy of the book. He did it the right way.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's TOS right now.
I think I remember Twitter saying, we do not own your tweets.
Yes, they did say that. You know, the New York Times quoted one of my tweets and definitely didn't ask for permission.
You retain the rights to any content you... Sorry.
No, I was going to say, like, I mean, I think people handle it differently. The Times quoted one of my tweets and didn't ask for my permission. And I, to me, that's fine. My tweets are public.
It's fine. It's public information. You're speaking in a public place.
Yeah, I'm in a public place. All my tweets are public. I feel like they're absolutely, you know, it's fair use to quote. Now, is it fair use to take a bunch of tweets and make a book out of them just by virtue of the fact that they're tweets? I mean, I understand why Merlin was upset.
Here's the thing from the TOS at Twitter. You retain your rights to any content you submit, post, or display on or through the services. By submitting, posting, or displaying content on or through the services, you grant us a worldwide, non-exclusive, royalty-free license with the right to sublicense, to use, copy, reproduce, process, adapt, modify, publish, transmit, display, distribute, or burn at dawn, I made that up, such content in any or all media distribution methods known now or later developed in this
world. Well, there you go. So Twitter acted within accordance of its agreement, and presumably the authors of that book asked Twitter, and Twitter sublicensed. So, and it's true. Let's say they quoted your blogs. As long as they attribute, they don't have to ask permission, right?
Right. I guess the difference, and I agree with that absolutely, and I agree with Gina. I think the distinction is public, but there's no sense of fair use in Twitter versus a blog. In a blog, if you quote the entire post and cause no reason to go to that post, right, then a blogger will complain the same way the New York Times or the Associated Press will, with some right, I think.
Yes.
What do you do in a Twitter in a tweet? Quote 70 characters?
Right.
That's the question.
Yeah, I mean, if someone took one of my blog posts, the entire thing wholesale, and did a book called Great Blog Posts and didn't ask me, that would be upsetting, even though it's a public web page, you know?
Right.
But yeah, because tweets are so brief, the line is, you know, do you think, Leo, that publishing company went to Twitter and that Twitter sublicensed those tweets to them? I got the impression that they just didn't ask anyone. They said, oh, well, all this stuff is public, so we're just going to make a book out of it. I don't know.
I don't know either. I know Merlin was pissed.
He was. I agree with. I understand why Merlin was upset. I think that he expended maybe a little too much energy writing, explaining why he was upset. I was like, really, Merlin, aren't you writing a book? I mean,
for a product,
really?
That's exactly, Gina, as well as I do, all three of us have written books. That's exactly what was going on. He was procrastinating.
And so he wrote a book on why his tweet shouldn't have been a book rather than work on his book.
Precisely.
Yes.
Why is it? It's always easier to write the thing you're not supposed to write.
Exactly.
You did write a good article for CNN about this Library of Congress thing.
Mm-hmm.
Who said tweets are trivial, says Gina Trapani.
Yeah, and all the CNN commenters were like, this is a complete waste of space, this article and the tweets.
There is still that notion that anything that happens on Twitter is of its very nature trivial.
Absolutely. There absolutely is that. But I think in aggregate, just doing sentiment analysis of, like, the world population is using Twitter to communicate, right? And Twitter has, and Neil says this all the time, Twitter has bridged the digital divide as much as any other service. Because of its mobile, because it's
well, maybe Facebook and Twitter.
Maybe Facebook. You know, Twitter was built to work with SMS. Everybody in the world is SMS. You don't have to have a fancy $500 phone to use Twitter, right? So its content is representative of the population, maybe better than any other service.
Right.
And you can do sentiment analysis. I mean, yes, there's lots of tweets about Justin Bieber's new album. You know, there's some cultural information about why is Justin Bieber? What is the friggin' appeal?
The analogy, Gina, I think, is Google finding out about the spread of flu by doing searches and discussions of flu in blogs and such. Same thing on Twitter. You can find out things that are valuable. Or there's something I put up on the feed today about Slate doing an analysis of meetups with the Tea Party events. They used Meetup as a platform. And you see the geographic spread and where it's concentrated. And it's really quite fascinating. And that's kind of the – I mean, Leo, it goes to another question, I think, which is part of what I tried to address in Berlin. Who owns the wisdom of the crowd?
Mm-hmm.
And part of the argument in more socialist Germany and Europe is, Street View shouldn't take a picture of our public buildings and then make commercial use of it. Well, no, that's public.
Right.
And if you look at Google itself, it is taking the crowd's links and clicks. It is adding value in the form of analysis, and it's feeding it back to us, by the way, for free, and adding value to that. Well, who owns what piece of that? You know, it becomes a really interesting issue when you create control, you create these kinds of questions.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So if one ham sandwich tweet in and of itself is invaluable, but no. If you have lots of people eating
ham trend in one area,
no, but
you get pork, you know, consumption numbers right from there.
Pork.
Well, we're always talking about how history is only, you know, is written by the victors, and it only records what the, you know, what the kings and queens did. And this is the people's history. I think it's perfectly legitimate.
That's well said, Leo.
Ding, 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 ding.
Well said.
And that's what Think Tank does. And let's not forget that in Iran, in Haiti, in Buenos Aires, or no, I'm sorry, in Santiago, that Twitter was really carried a lot of news. And if it, at the very least, what happened there is going to be of interest to future historians. I don't think it's the only copy of the record. That's why I say, why doesn't the, and along with you, Jeff, why doesn't the Library of Congress record more? It's not, let's not keep Twitter. It's let's get Twitter and everything else.
What I talked about a lot at this speech is that the public owns what's public. And as soon as you try to make part of that private, you've stolen from us, the public. And what happens on a street corner is clearly public. What happens on the internet in general, to me, is public, unless you've specifically put it behind a wall so you can't get to it. And there are plenty of means to do that. But otherwise, it's public. I don't mean that you can take the whole thing and steal it and recreate it and all that. But can you analyze it and scrape it and learn from it? Yeah, I hope so.
This is kind of the argument with Rupert Murdoch that we're having too, isn't it?
Yes.
It's that same notion.
Yeah, no one wants to steal his stuff, which is what he thinks is happening. But to be able to know it's there and link to it becomes a right, the right to link to.
Is that a legitimate point of view, or is it just Luddites or people who don't get it? Is there any?
I'll tell you, it's spread in Europe. I hear that all over Germany.
I find that interesting, yeah.
Is the stealing content argument. Yeah. They curse Google, arguing that it's stealing when they just, part of this is just not understanding the new economics of this world. You and your friggin' link economy crap, Jarvis. But yeah, it's the link economy versus the ink economy. It's where we are.
It's just fascinating. It kind of ties in with that. It's not merely the link economy, but the public nature of the web and who owns this. I think it's just fascinating conversation.
Web is a public place. This is where Doc Searles really taught me.
Yes.
When I called the web a medium, among many others, he said, no, don't do that. That brings all dangers. It's a place.
It's the commons.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a break, come back with more. There is a lot more news, an update for Google Docs, an acquisition from Google itself. Talk about this new VP8 codec we mentioned a couple of weeks ago and what really is happening to it. And a stunning revelation by Eric Schmidt at a party. All that coming up in just a bit. It has nothing to do with Marissa Meyer. But first, although if I really wanted you to stay tuned, I would say it has to do with Marissa Meyer. Actually, maybe not. It has to do with the iPad. Now, that's going to get people to stick around. I do want to talk about backup. You know, when you are putting all your data on a portable device, and I learned this when my laptop was stolen, it is really important that you have good backups. And it's important that the backups are not sitting next to the laptop, because when they steal that and the backup, you're really screwed. You got to have off-site backup. And there are ways to do it. I know people email themselves stuff. They email it to Gmail. Steve Gibson mails DVDs of his hard drive images to his mother. But really, there's a better way, a more modern way. It's called Carbonite. It's off-site backup done right. Go there right now for free. No credit card needed. Go to Carbonite, CARBONITE.com. Use the offer code TWIT, and you're going to get 15 days free. You can immediately see what happens. You install it, Windows or Mac. And it immediately starts backing up your personal data. Not the operating system, not the apps, the stuff you create, the stuff you can't afford to lose, your pictures, your emails, your financial records. That stuff that you cannot afford to lose is instantly, securely backed up, by the way, using 128-bit SSL. As an option, AES 256-bit encryption, even better. So it's really locked down. It's up on the Carbonite servers where you can access it not only from the original computer, but from your iPhone, any other computer that can get online. You can go, you can say, oh, I need that file. Restore is simple. It's a great way to move to a new computer. You just move the account, download everything again. You got it all. Carbonite is the way of the future. And less than $5 a month for everything inside your hard drive. You know, all that personal stuff. Less than $5 a month. Go to Carbonite.com, try it free, use the offer code TWIT. If you decide to buy 2 free months, by the way, after you do the trial. CARBONITE, Carbonite.com. It's backup done right. And I learned my lesson. Let me tell you, thank goodness I was using Carbonite. Let's see, what should I start with? Google Docs, there's drawing now in Google Docs.
new drawing editor. It's pretty sweet.
Is it? Did you play with it? I like it
it's
collaborative.
It is collaborative. So if you're drawing, Leo, and I have that same document open, I can see the document change as you change it, which is super, which is sweet. Very wave-like. And that kind of live typing also goes into regular doc. So as you and I are sharing or working on a document together, I will see your cursor move, much like my beloved Google Wave and Etherpad. So, and I hear, which was, this was upsetting to me personally, but I hear that the code base that does the live pipe typing in Google Docs had nothing to do with Wave.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, or right Etherpad. Hand, left hand.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, I'm worried that this is the kind of the beginning of the death knell for Wave. I still have my fingers crossed for a good Wave announcements next month. But it's pretty awesome.
Did you say the death knell?
Do you really
think?
I mean, you know, Wave offers some features that Docs does not, like federation and inline replies. But Docs just got comments within the documents, but they're kind of like little yellow post-it notes off to the side where you can have conversations like attached to bits of text, which is pretty cool. And, you know, obviously, Wave has federation. You can build widgets and robots, which you can't do for Docs. Wave is you can use Wave as a messaging application, which you really wouldn't do with Docs. But, you know, the question is, like, how many more people, you know, how many more messaging apps do you really want? So I'm a little worried for my little Wave because I think Wave is incredible still. So we'll see what happens.
Gina, but we got a piece from a Pulitzer Prize winner in Seattle used Wave to do his story.
Yes, I'd written that up in chapter 10 of my book, which is like Wave uses. I had written that up. The Seattle Times during a manhunt for a suspected cop killer used Wave to gather information and live real time about sightings and that's great. But but increasingly it feels like Wave is like this new novel thing, but not something that people are actually
nobody's using.
You know, so I mean I'm using it, but. Yeah, it's a little bit of a tough sell, so I'm hoping that Wave is going to...
The chat room is saying Buzz is next.
I hope not, because I love both Buzz and Wave.
Yeah, they're important.
What did Google do wrong?
I don't think Buzz is going to go anywhere, though. I mean, Buzz is useful even just in aggregating, to aggregate people's social media content from other sources kind of way, even if it's just that. Although, I don't know, there's still some really good conversations
going on.
Didn't
keep FriendFeed alive.
Well, that's true. But FriendFeed didn't have a giant corporation behind it. I mean, lots of Google products.
Is that enough, though? Don't you have to have the network effect? It's not enough to have a giant corporation. This is actually a really good test case. Is it enough for a giant corporation to stand by, say, we're going to do a Twitter killer and we're giant and everybody's using Gmail, so you use it?
Well, that's the thing. They have Gmail, right? I mean, it's in Gmail. I think people who use Gmail at least are still... Do you think most normals are turning off Buzz?
Yes.
I think that was the mistake. was putting it in Gmail. They thought that was their killer app, and it wasn't. And it's still right-hand, left-hand. There's a new follow finder that is out of Google Labs to help you find people in...
On Twitter!
Twitter, not Buzz.
Yes. There's like, very much a let a thousand flower, beta flower.
I admire that. I think that's great because I think there's a lot of companies that do the opposite. They say, well, no, it's not. It's got to be work with our product. And then you don't see the benefit of it. And I think the follow finder is a great tool.
The follow finder is neat. I think it's confusing to users. I think it's also confusing to some of the internal groups at Google.
Right.
That's the impression that I get. But yeah, so the follow finder is pretty neat. I mean, it's pretty interesting that they're indexing social graphs on Twitter.
Right.
And Jeff, what did you tweet? You said that you're on your follow finder, your recommended followers were
the first
Leo
two
and I?
Were you and Leo.
Well, there you go. It's smart too. You don't wait a minute.
We're together for a reason.
Wait a minute, Jeff. You don't follow us?
No, it already gave me people that I already follow, but it said that the people whose followers are most like my followers are you two.
Ah.
Which makes sense, right? Because people follow the show. Yeah. And most overlaps. They're doing major set comparison.
Right.
Which is kind of incredible, right? I mean, Leo alone, you've got a gazillion followers. Just doing that computation is, but it's fast.
It's really fast, yeah.
Yeah,
discovery seems to be the thing that came up a lot at Chirp. People saying, we need better discovery mechanisms for people to follow. I don't know. I don't need more people to follow. I need more people to unfollow.
No, you want to follow the right people, though. It's not numbers. It's following the right people. So I think something like that could help you maybe discover that one person that you weren't following that you want to follow.
Well, but the real app then becomes the killer the killer app that kills people. Right? The truly killer app.
Not kills them literally.
The unfollow recommender?
The unfollow
recommender, right. Because the problem is that's what killed bookmarks to me. Right? I don't use bookmarks anymore because everyone's bookmarks got to be a mess.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. My Facebook is a bit of a mess. Even though I only friend people I know, they're trying to keep it in order, but it's a bit of a mess. Twitter, I just add to it. I never take away from it. Not that I want to kill people, but it's too much work to do. To categorize things into lists, which Twitter tried to do and Facebook tried to do, no, way too much work.
By the way, that was my tool of the week, but it's okay.
Oh, sorry.
No, I mean, inevitably we were going to talk about it. I have to pick more obscure tools. It's a fun tool. We'll talk about it a little bit more. Yeah. What is this plink? What is plink?
Plink.
Plink. What does it do?
It recognizes pieces of art? I've never heard of it.
It's very small. It's an Android application.
Right.
Well, wait a minute.
Plink art. It does basically what Goggles does, right? Goggles already recognizes pieces of art. And I hear, Jeff, did you say this? That someone who wrote it up said that Goggles actually does a better job of recognizing art than Plink art does.
Well, basically, they hired these guys to work at Goggles. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So Plink art must have something cool going on in the back end
that's part of their acquisition. Google stock. Last week, they announced another killer quarter, and nonetheless, the stock went down 7%, $45.
Oh, this is
that's going to be spending money.
Well, it's also that stupid Wall Street thing that they didn't meet expectations of some analysts, so they suck.
The general line is that they're fearing they're going to be spending so much money.
So Plink, Plurk, Plunk.
What phone is that?
This is Plink. So look at that. That's a G1, isn't it? A white G1, it looks like.
White G1, it does look like that.
Oh, maybe that's the... No, it's still got the little trackball.
No, it's not a G1.
It's an HTC phone. What is it?
Sorry, I'll
that's a MyTouch. It's a MyTouch. What is that phone he's using to look up the death of the virgin in Plink? Yeah, it's just like Goggles, huh? Except Goggles does more.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, we've solved that mystery. Let's see. What else? Well, actually, there's quite a bit else. The VP8 codec we could talk about briefly. We talked about it the other day. That's part of what they got with On2. And the whole issue is which codec is going to win the HTML5 seal of approval. H.264 is certainly the front runner, but it's encumbered by patents. We talked last week about Ogg Theora, which I don't know if it has a shot at it. And then there's this VP8 codec, which Google owns and is now going to open source. They bought it when they bought On2 about a couple months ago. VP3 is Theora. So VP8 is maybe a better Theora. I'm very confused. We need an expert on this stuff.
Yeah, we do.
Okay,
yay,
that's enough.
Open source.
Yay, open source.
Yay, better video codecs.
Yay, HTML5.
Yay, good OSS developers making it better.
Yep. I think we need HTML5. We want it to succeed. So Eric Schmidt's at a house party in Los Angeles and says, oh, we're going to do an iPad. It's going to be better. And this is the shocker. It's not going to run Chrome OS. It's going to run Android.
Android, baby. App store. Or app market.
I think that's key, isn't it? You got to have apps. I think we've learned that web apps are not enough. That's all Chrome OS would support.
Yeah, yeah. I worry for Chrome OS. I don't know. I wonder what's going to happen with that.
Yeah, he was also pumping that.
It makes sense.
Last week as well. About how Chrome OS will mean that you have the 2-second sign-on at any machine anywhere, and you never need to do anything. Your employees save time, blah, 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 blah. He was pumping that last week as well.
Hmm. Interesting.
It'll be interesting to see how that turns out. And actually, they announced Cloud Print this week.
Oh, that's interesting, too. And that would tie in. That's going through Chrome OS, or is it an app? Or how does that work?
It's going to be in Chrome OS, and it's also going to be in Chrome, the browser, on the desktop. So you're going to be able to use it anywhere. And the idea is that you'd be able to print any job to the cloud, to any printer via Google.
What do I have to do? Yeah, they're going to solve the whole driver thing.
Yeah, the problem is that no printer companies yet are... There's no printer that exists that will do this.
Right.
So this
they're
is
hoping
the
that printers
convincing printer companies to sign on.
Right. And of course, I think a lot of people, with I think probably good reason, are saying, hey, Google's going to see all my print jobs now, too, all my printouts.
Oh, what the heck?
Why not? Hey, at this point, they see all your email.
They know more. You know, how much more? Yeah, how much more do they need? Exactly. So it's in the labs right now. You can go to code.google.com and look for Cloud Print. You need a cloud-aware printer. Or you can go through your computer to a legacy printer, but the computer will have to handle that. It has to be shared, I guess. Yep. But a cloud-aware printer on the net would work.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Well, I can certainly see a small enterprise using this to just make every printer available to every employee today.
Right.
You do it through computers, right?
I think it's interesting. No? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, hey, I would love to be able to say, I mean, my mom hardly ever gets online. It would be great if I could print, a picture to her printer in New York.
Well, I would
San
scare
Diego.
My mother and father to death if I did that.
Honey, what's that sound?
The printer
is alive!
Anything that means that I don't have to fax stuff anymore is a good thing.
That's what this is, isn't it?
Yes, basically.
This is cloud faxing.
Ooh, that's... You've just done it. You've killed the evil fax.
Thank God.
Oh, God, please. It can't come fast enough.
That's what this is.
That's
then again,
they should have called it Google fax.
Yeah, they should have. It's
Bingo,
true.
Leo.
Cloud print scares people. But Google fax. Ooh, I like that.
Because the one thing is that you've got to get things like signatures on.
Right.
But that's... You can draw in Google Docs. Hello.
I can draw my
signature.
Yeah, there
you go. I can draw my digital signature. I do. At this point,
sign
I'm pretty much
there and put it up and get it over there.
Signature.
It's something that the iPad desperately needs. It's like the one thing really missing from the iPad is the ability to print from it.
But the irony is that Google may save the iPad.
That would be funny.
Google Docs and things like this, it will make the iPad more tolerable for those occasional business uses.
Less of a peripheral and more of a cloud device.
Right.
Yeah. And Google still benefits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no harm to Apple, no harm to Google. You know, what the hell?
So Google's net income was $1.96 billion. That's not so bad. Revenue was $6.77 billion.
But what was it up, Leo?
Income up 37%.
It's just the percentages are just awe-inspiring.
Yeah. Wow. Paid clicks up 15% year to year. Cost per click up 7% year to year. This is you want awe-inspiring? You know how much cash Google has just in the bank? Is this a number?
No, it's not. No. Dane gave me the number now, so I figured that was safe.
I will stay away from that number. Google in the bank. I wonder what they do with it. Do they put them in certificates of deposit? What do they do? $26.5 billion.
Holy
That's the size
crap.
Of an endowment for like Harvard, right? This is just their cash.
Just in the bank. Getting 0.25% interest.
Dude. That's nuts.
What's the interest?
Can they buy Iceland and stop up the, that has solved two problems at once. Iceland's debt. And the volcano. Yeah.
Wow.
If they put it in a CD and get 4% interest, they could just close the company. They just all go home.
They could have solved the debt crisis with just their money.
It's like almost $1 billion a year in interest.
Yeah.
I'd take that. Jeez Louise.
Yeah, that's... Wow.
Jeez Louise. All right, I think that's enough. Oh, I gotta do this one more. You know the case where the three Google executives were convicted in Italy for violating the Italian privacy law by allowing the posting and of a controversial bullying video, and it stayed up there for 2 months. They pulled it down as soon as law enforcement asked them to. The judge has weighed in, Judge Oscar Maggi, in a 111-page decision. He says, there's no such a thing as the limitless prairie of the internet where everything is permitted and nothing can be prohibited on pain of a global excommunication. He sounds like the Pope. Actually, he's German, isn't he? On pain of a global excommunication by the people of the web. Actually, he sounds like Dracula.
You switched, didn't you?
Yeah.
You switched midstream.
You don't know what he is. He's German and Italian. He's a Pope, but he talks like this, but he's also German. Apparently, he says, I don't buy this at all, but he says the internet is not a lawless prairie. And therefore, because Google Italy handled the content, it bears a responsibility for what's on there.
I didn't research this, but people in Europe were telling me that the EU has basically already overruled that judge. And said that judgment was illegal. The EU makes it very complicated to figure out Europe these days.
It's the commercial exploitation, essentially. He says because Google made a money.
That's the European attitude.
They're in the trouble. Yeah, money's evil. And
that's what makes it wrong. Government is. When I gave my talk about the German paradox, and somebody very smart, a Swiss blogger or an Austrian blogger came up at the end, I can't tell the difference, and raised a good point. He said, well, the American paradox in our view is, he said, you Americans have a very good government lasted for 200 years, yet you are the ones who distrust business. We in Europe have had bad governments. We're the ones who distrust, I'm sorry.
The other way around. We distrust government. They distrust business.
In Europe, they distrust business. And I said, wow, that's a wonderful point.
It's interesting, isn't it?
I couldn't figure it out.
Google's.
Can I ask my experts two questions real quick?
Certainly.
One was about, so Google now adds services to your hosting control panel. Did you see that, Gina?
I didn't see that one. What do you mean they add services to it?
So now, and other kinds of amateurs control panels that people like me have to use.
I use Plesk.
Okay. Oh, Plesk, indeed.
You can add web elements, custom search, site search, AdSense, all these things so that your host can now offer these Google services.
There's a Plesk plugin. That's cool.
Is that a big deal? Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, it's nice.
Okay.
Sure.
It's always
the
nice.
Other one to ask my friends, the experts. Aren't I lucky, chat room? I have experts at hand. Is the Israeli ban of the iPad, the Wi-Fi, that it's different Wi-Fi? Can you explain that one to me?
You know, it's interesting because Princeton also banned the iPad, and a number of other universities are doing so also. And I did read, Princeton's reasoning, which has to do with a faulty DHCP implementation in the iPad. And,
really?
Yeah. And at first I kind of poo-pooed it because this happened before with the iPhone. You remember a couple of universities said, oh, you can't use the iPhone on a network. It just takes up too many resources. And they backed down. It was stupid. This actually, I read Princeton's reasoning and it actually made sense. They don't handle the DHCP lease properly.
So is it just hammering the DHCP server? Or
no.
What's the problem? It's just too...
No. And in fact, it's kind of an interesting thing. What they do is when the DHCP lease expires, you're supposed to get a new IP address.
Right.
It does not. However, the DHCP server thinks that address is available. So potentially you'll have two devices with the same IP address on the network. The only person that bothers is the iPad user who suddenly gets a message saying, you know, there's another guy with the IP address, and may lose connectivity. So it doesn't really hurt the network. And Princeton's just saying, well, but we don't want these iPad people to come. You know, it's anti-Apple sentiment. Let's be honest. We don't want these iPad people to come to us and complain. So we're just going to ban them.
Oh, that wonderful geek, not geek, but tech support phrase. We don't support blank.
Right. They actually aren't banning iPads. They're just saying if this happens to you, we're going to knock you off. And
supposedly in Israel, they were confiscating them at the border.
Yeah, the country says the device's wireless technology threatens to create interference with other products. It's 2.4 gigahertz.
It's rockets and things.
You know. Apple says, we don't know. iPad complies with international standards. We're not sure what's going on. It's a puzzle. Tis a puzzle.
Sure is.
At Chirp, when the Wi-Fi went out, John Battelle, who was the MC, said, you know, we're noticing a lot of connections by iPhones. Can you guys just, like, shut off your iPhone Wi-Fi and stick to your laptop?
Oh.
We can't do two connections per attendee. And I was like, really? You didn't expect that there would be at least two Wi-Fi connections per human at the Twitter conference? Come on.
Whoever does the Wi-Fi for South by Southwest should just hire out. They have the same problem at ReiPublica. They have the problem here. They have the problem everywhere.
Right.
For God's sakes, it's not rocket science. It just takes routers, right?
Well, and you know what Loic did at LeWeb? Because 2 years ago, LeWeb was like, everybody was bitching and moaning. And then he brought in, because I think it was, can't remember, was it British Telecom? It was a local telecom that was doing, maybe it was France Telecom. And he brought in somebody else, and these guys just like, they had like gigabit. It was like everywhere. And they had more bandwidth than God.
That's what you got to do. You got to do it. It's the worst PR for your conference.
Terrible.
When you search for the hashtag and all it says is Wi-Fi fail, tethering Android, help us Wi-Fi, please.
So at least 10 iPads have been confiscated at Ben Gurion as the travelers come into Israel you're required to pay for storage fees, and you could pick it up on your way out.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. I don't know if they did that for the iPad. And I don't know what Princeton's going to do. Apparently, George Washington and other universities are also banning iPads now. It's funny how where there are Luddites everywhere, even in IT departments these days.
Because the DHCP problem?
I think the DHCP lease, yeah. And by the way, that's an easy fix, and I'm sure Apple will push a fix out.
There's a software update coming out tomorrow, yesterday.
Just software. Yeah. Easy to fix.
Yep.
Let us get to our tip, number, and tool of the week, starting with Gina Trapani and her tip of the week.
Cool. I got two quick tips this week. First one, you can drag and drop attachments into Gmail now. And it uses HTML5, so you got to be using Firefox 3.6 or Chrome on Windows. And it's HTML, it's pure HTML5, which is awesome. And, it's not that big a deal. But, you know, back in the day when the whole conversation about whether or not apps were going to move to the web, you know, one of the reasons why that couldn't ever happen is because you couldn't drag and drop files. And now that is becoming very possible. So you take a file, just drag it onto near the place in your Gmail Compose window where it says attach file. It'll change and say, hey, drop your file here. You drop it and it's in, which is awesome. You don't have to do the explorer and find your file. Second tip, and this was a big one for me, appbrain.com. This is for Android users. This is an awesome service. You go to appbrain.com and you sign in and you download the application to your Android phone, and it generates a list of all the apps that are on your phone, how much they cost, whether or not they were free, ratings, user ratings. You can browse other people's lists. If I see an app on Jeff's list that looks interesting, I can click install, and then the next time I turn on my phone, it'll install it. So Leo and Jeff, both of you, my list is on there. It's appbrain.com/users.
Oh, this is killer.
Gina Trapani /apps-on-the-phone. You can find me there. You can embed really neat widget, which I put on smartaware.org. It actually shows the phone with the applications menu. It's really cool. And you can click on any icon and be, hey, what is this? I posted this on my blog. I had readers post their lists in the comments. I found so many cool apps this week.
That is super cool.
And it automatically synchronizes. Like every week we recommend another Android app, right? So you get new apps and it automatically syncs up to your AppBrain list, makes it public. You can surf other people's lists. It's really awesome. And this is something that iTunes doesn't do. I would love if iTunes did this too. But really cool way to discover apps and to see what your favorite Android users are using. So Leo, I challenge you to create an AppBrain list.
I'm doing it right now.
Because your list will be insane.
I'm doing it right now.
I will gain and only benefit on my end, not contribute much, but I'll do it. I asked for this a long time ago. Remember, I asked.
Yes, you did.
I said I wanted your guys' lists of apps, and I wanted an easy way to get it. Seek and you shall find.
And it syncs in the background. You don't ever have to update it manually again. You just have to be running the AppBrain app on your Android phone. It's fantastic.
You made this wonderful thing.
I've been using, Wahoo? I can't remember. Woofoo. And there is an app that you can run on Windows and Mac that does the same thing. It collects all your apps. It records it. And it's a very, very useful way to find apps. And there's also iusethis.com. And that's what we were talking about that, remember? And Jeff exactly called for this.
Yeah, social software usage. Awesome. Great way to see what people use and get ideas.
I'm going to scan in the barcode right now on the page because it put up a QR code. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to install this right now. This will be very easy.
Swiss Code Monkeys.
Swiss Code Monkeys. Well, who doesn't love Swiss Code Monkeys?
It lists what kind of device you're using. So it says Nexus One on mine. It tells you I have 27 apps. 26 are free. That's 96%. One paid because I'm cheap, obviously.
One?
Total size.
One? Wakupa. That's the name of it.
I have only one paid app. And it tells you how much money you spent in the Android market. $6.99 for me.
That's sad.
I know. It is sad. I looked at that and I remember you saying, Leo, that you buy apps just to support developers. And I was thinking, man.
You're a developer. You got to start spending some money.
I know. Now that it's public, I'm going to spend some more money to support my fellow developers.
Well, we've brought the Swiss Code Monkeys to their knees because the download is not happening. But as soon as it does, I'm Leo Laporte on AppBrain.
Awesome.
Yeah. And I'm sure you're usually Jeff Jarvis wherever you go. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it sorts the list by how recently you installed it, so you can see new apps that people are trying out. It's just, it's really, really, really cool.
Oh, this is fantastic. Really great. There's the two tips of the week for you. Now, Jeff Jarvis and his number of the week.
Well, actually, I have Dane to thank for it because I figured if he could give it to me. And it's really a simple number, but I'll be grateful. It was a nice life hacker site, a page by, give credit where credit is due, Erica Ho.
Mm-hmm.
Just put up a nice little infographic of how many servers are owned by whom.
Oh, I love this. Yeah. Actually, so, this is a great story.
Yeah, Google is an estimated 1 million servers, and nobody knows, they won't say, but fine. But this comparison to others, that the other big box in this is Intel at 100,000, Rackspace at 56,000, 10 of which are storing Robert Scoble's social life. 1&1, the internet hosting company, 70,000. Akamai, which I would have thought would have a lot more because it serves so much of the web, 61,000. Facebook, 30,000. And so it's just a minor little interesting, you know.
But if the biggest is Intel with 100,000, we're talking another order of magnitude at least for Google. I mean, nobody knows.
Well, that makes
sense,
though. I mean, Intel does have a hosting business, but it's not huge.
Right.
I was actually surprised Intel was that big.
Yeah, what are they doing with 100,000 servers?
They have hosting services. They have services that they offer, but I guess they're much bigger in enterprise than I knew.
So Gina, I finally have installed this app. So what do I do? I press manage my apps, app categories. What do I do? Hot apps?
Yeah, there should be a sync. Try manage my apps. There should be an option.
Gina, it tells me to sign into my Google account.
Yes. And then once
does that
you do,
mean it has to be the one associated with the phone, or can it be my apps one?
That might just be a single sign-on. I don't know if that really has anything to do with the app, because you're going to put it on your phone.
I think it can be either your Google account or your Google Apps account. I think either one will work.
Right. It does say once you're in the phone to sign in with your Google account, but I don't think it has to tie into.
Okay, yeah. So if you click on Manage My Apps, there's a Sync My Apps button.
Yeah, and it's done.
You've got to sign in first.
Yeah. And so now I have all my apps. But I will have to sign in, and then I have to sync it to AppBrain. Okay, I see.
Right, and then it'll send up everything that you've got installed there. And then if you, in that same manage apps console, if you choose to install an app from the AppBrain websites, if you see something on my list or Jess' list or whoever's list, you click install. When you go into manage my apps, you tap perform installs, and you'll be able to install whatever you chose from the website, which is pretty neat. The interface is a little, when you perform installs, it actually just searches for the app in the market. So you have to go through the market rigmarole. So you can't install multiple, you have to do it kind of one at a time. That's a little annoying, but whatever. The Android market just has to get better at that in general. There isn't any update all button yet. And you should be able to say install these five apps in one shot. Hopefully that they'll fix that in Android in general at some point. But yeah, AppBrain is pretty neat.
All right. And now it is my turn for my tip. And I actually have two tips since we kind of talked a little bit about Follow Finder. No. I've done that to you so many times, I can't very well complain. So I will show you Follow Finder real quickly. So you enter in your username or any username.
Which I think is the point. Not so much yours, but if you say, well, I love that Gina. Well, I want to be more like her.
Yeah. Let me see who Gina follows that intersects with me. Is that it? Well, it doesn't know about me. It's just going to show who Gina follows that's interesting. And she follows me, right? Tweeps You Might Like, Scobalizer, Dave Weiner, The Real Dvorak. It's all the same. It's all our friends. That's good.
Who are the ones who are most like you? Up at the top right?
Most like me? Tweeps with similar followers?
Tweeps with similar followers. But see,
that was because I used my name. Her name. So let me use Leo Laporte. Obviously, I wouldn't show up. But I bet you, Kevin Rose.
Kevin Rose.
The Real Dvorak, Patrick Norton, Alex Albrecht, all the people I used to work with. So that's pretty smart. I'm not sure exactly.
It is. It's pretty smart, yeah.
How do it know?
Well, so it's comparing Kevin Rose's set of followers with yours, Leo. And we're talking about both of you have.
And it did that instantly. He's got millions.
He's got millions. You've got millions.
Cash.
He's got millions.
It must cash.
It's doing some serious set comparison there. Yeah. This is a problem. I'm trying to build this into Think Tank. It's not an easy problem to solve. So I'm impressed with how fast it is. And
is there like with sort algorithms? Are there like kind of clever algorithms that simplify that?
There must be. I need to do a little more research into it.
Time to pull out the Donald Knuth.
There must be. But when you have a million, numbers, huge numbers. Compare it with another set of huge numbers. you know, and you're looking, you're comparing to a giant set. I would love to know how it's going, what's going on in the background there.
It helps when you have a million servers.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess it's Google, right? I think Donald Knuth is going to have to write a new book on social graph searching and comparison. It's a whole new thing. He wasn't around for that. So I have one more tip. It's actually an app, and if you followed me on the Swiss Code Monkey site, you'd know about it. I found it in one of the Android app reviews. I'm always looking at Android app reviews. And of course, now my phone's crashed.
Uh-oh.
Oh, there it goes. Now we go. Sometimes it gets slow, and somebody told me it was the, and I mentioned this before, the beautiful widgets. They said that really slows it down. This is called Call Track. It's free. I think it's free. You're going to love it. So what you do is you create in your Google Calendar a new category. I made one called Calls. Then you enable Call Track on your phone, and it adds to your Google Calendar. In my case, I log all incoming, outgoing, and missed calls. And if I now go to my calendar on Google, every call I've made, every call that's come in, every call I've missed is logged with the phone number, the length of time, and it's all part of my Google Calendar.
Whoa.
It's really kind of an eye-opener. I spent a lot more time on the phone than I thought. Now, I'm going to see. I don't know if I could show this because if
yeah,
I do,
phone numbers involved.
It's all the phone numbers in here, so I don't know if I dare show it. But I have a calendar that shows what phone calls I've made.
So question for you. Could you go, so say you and I spent a half an hour on the phone and it showed up in your calendar. Could you go to that event and maybe take some notes in the description field about what we talked about?
Sure. It's now a calendar entry.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
Isn't that cool?
That would be really useful because I always forget. When did we talk about that?
Right. I have a log of all my calls. Really, I found it incredibly handy.
Is there authentication to subscribe to that calendar or no, it has your
Google
login.
It's a private calendar.
Oh,
so it's my calendar.
Okay.
I could share it. I mean, I absolutely could share it. I don't want to show anybody's phone numbers, otherwise I'd show you. But it really is, it's really fantastic. I found it to be incredibly useful.
That's sweet.
Yeah. So that you'll see on my list of Android apps that I use, of the hundreds of Android apps that I use. So a couple of tips for you, the Follow Find, and then a handy little app, and I'm not sure how much I paid for it. I should probably write it down. I'm pretty sure it was free, called Call Track. If you search the Android marketplace for it, you'll find it. And I think it was Fandroid. It was the Fandroid website that I found that on. I haunt those now. Looking for cool new apps. I'll give them a plug. Gina Trapani is the blogger at smarterware.org, a great place to go to find great tips. Of course, she writes for Lifehacker and other great things, including CNN and Time Magazine.
Fast Company,
whatever they're. One of those.
one of those magazine things. Whatever they
are. One of those things.
Those magazine things.
Yeah, magazine things.
I only write for the website, though.
Yes. So. Oh, that's all right. You don't have to apologize.
No, I'm not apologizing. I'm roasting.
That's right. She writes for the site. She's not one of them ink-stained wretches. Jeff Jarvis was an ink-stained wretch, and he's found new life as a blogger at buzzmachine.com.
Second childhood.
That's another way to look at it. And Jeff's book is What Would Google Do? Gina's book is The Complete Guide to Google Wave at completewaveguide.com. You can watch this show, and when we do it, 2:15 Pacific time, 5:15. We're moving.
We're moving.
Starting Wednesday.
Big change, yeah.
Very good point. We will now be doing it at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on Wednesday, starting April 21st at live.twit.tv. Now, you can still listen and watch to the downloadable versions at on iTunes or the Zune store, anywhere you get Google Listen, anywhere you get podcast aggregators. And we do have a YouTube video at youtube.com/twit. There's a whole Twig channel, so you can watch each and every one of our episodes as they come out. We are available on almost all the platforms now through the MediaFly application, the Twit application. Just search for Twit in your app store. Thanks,
the
guys.
The chat room is gasping.
Why are they gasping?
Wednesday.
Is it
4 p.m.
Oh, yeah. Well, we decided we wanted to be on during the weekdays because I think we don't get as much attention as we could, and we certainly have a hard time getting people on because everybody wants Saturday afternoon for themselves. I don't understand that.
Fools with lies.
And actually,
we'll get great guests.
Jeff and
we'll
Gina are two of the people who wanted their lives back. So I don't have a life, so I don't count. But we're glad to do that. We'll be doing the GizWiz at this time starting next week, the Daily GizWiz with Vic DiBartolo. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next time. Next Wednesday, don't forget, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern for This Week in Google.